Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses, and I do it for an audience of real entrepreneurs. I actually believe in the future that just calling anyone an entrepreneur will be redundant, right? If you're a human being, you'll basically be an entrepreneur. Well, or maybe we'll assume that everyone's an entrepreneur, and then there'll be some outliers, some people who are not because they happen to work, I don't know, for the government or something. But for the most part, we're all shifting towards that. And if we are, it's the type of thing where there's nobody telling you exactly what to do and how to get the result that you're looking for. You got to figure it out yourself. And figuring it out yourself really doesn't work nearly as well as hearing how other people did it, getting ideas from them, and getting fired up because you get some really good, insightful ideas from people who've done it too. Better people, more importantly, who've done it and gotten further than you have. That's the way to just keep growing and building as an entrepreneur. Anyway, so what does this have to do with today's guest? Today's guest is a former laborer who started a company in real estate and then said, you know what? I actually want to help people much more than this first company did. I have this vision for helping the world. His name is Peter Rex. He founded this company called Trustwork. I downloaded it onto my phone. I went onto it and what I saw was I could hire somebody to be a handyman and come fix my place. I can get apartment turns, which I didn't know what it meant before I started talking to Peter, but I know now. I could get somebody to clean my place. I can find a general contractor. And if I want to list myself as all those things, I could do it. And so I invited him here to find out how he built up this business and this app and how he grew to the kind of revenue that my team told me he had. And we could do it all thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. The first will help you publish your book. And I know you don't want to publish a book, so I'll tell you why it's here. It's called Choose Yourself Financial. If you know James Altucher, that's the guy behind it. And the second will help you host your website right. It's called HostGator. I'll tell you about those later. But first, Peter, good to have you here.
Andrew, great to be here and great to be with your audience, the Freedom Fighters. Happy to just be able to engage them.
Revenue-wise, what did you guys do?
So revenue, we don't discuss those numbers, but we've been, my previous company, which is still alive and well, is about $150 million in revenue annually. And it's growing, I would say, you know, not at a very fast pace right now, but still growing, say 10 or so percent. This current company, Trustwork, which is only about a year and a half, 2 years old, is growing, you know, the fastest company I've ever had as far as the growth rate month to month. But the revenues, I'm going to keep that private right now.
Give me some sense of it. Because I don't want people thinking that you started out with a buck, then you doubled it, and now you're at $200, which is great percentage-wise, but not impressive, not nearly as impressive as what you did. Give me a ballpark, over 5 million, over 10 million. Over a million, whatever you feel comfortable with. I just want people to get a sense of size.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, look, it's so early stage. That's another thing. I mean, depending on even when this podcast is listened to, it's going to depend on the number I'm giving you, but it's above 5 million annual revenue. And it's grown at about 30% month over month, but that number could go up or down. I would say that that's been the average so far. That is an unsustainable average. And it's not something I've ever had happen where it was growing this fast, but we've also done a lot of hustle on this up front before I even launched the company. So that's why I think we're having some success early.
I saw.
But that's where we're at.
And the hustle we're going to get into because that's one of the big reasons why you're doing so well. The other part is your focus. You said, look, this is going to be a place where anyone can buy anything essentially or connect with anyone. Am I right? But we're going to start with real estate.
Yeah, I mean, reversing back, if it, you know, just to also for the audience to give them a little bit of credibility. But one of the things when I was starting out, you know, 13, 14 years ago was before I listened to anybody, there's so much material out there. I would think, you know, who is this person? You know, can I trust him? You know, yep. So I'll give you people, you know, a little background. I built a company, $1.5 billion in assets, real estate company, privately owned, controlled by me. And I visited 85 countries when I was putting the plans together for this Trustwork company. And it's going to be the biggest company ever built. And that's my plan, and I'm going to make it happen. And my team's going to make it happen.
Let's talk about that company. I agree with you. I think people want to know, where's this guy coming from? It was called Invest.
Yeah, absolutely.
What InvestRes invests its own money in residential real estate. Well, it gets money from investors and then invests it in residential real estate. Am I right?
Yeah. So what I'll do is for the listeners here, because a lot of them are either entrepreneurs or they're going to be entrepreneurs or they're trying to, you know, improve their trade, learn some tricks, whatever. You know, when I started out, I came out with a philosophy degree, kind of political philosophy degree in government out of Georgetown University. Didn't know a damn thing in business, never even looked into business, never thought I wanted to be in business. felt called to go into business and decided to go in, which is a complete change. I mean, my friends almost felt probably like I was selling out on my true self, you know, because I'm extremely idealistic. And so long story short, when I decided to get into business, I came to the real estate side because I couldn't get money for anything. So I didn't have access to capital. But with real estate, I could buy something small and get some money cobbled together, $1,000 here and there, and buy something small. If I knew what I was doing, I could get the cat, I could flip, I could get
like
money.
What? What's the first thing that, what's the first thing that you bought?
So what I did was I bought a few 4-unit properties, which would be small multifamily, you know, real estate properties. And
where?
What you can do is I bought them in the New York area.
For how much?
You know, I'm not sure details about 30, 40 years ago, but
just ballpark. Here's what I want to get a sense of. New York real estate is not, it's not inexpensive. I can't believe a philosophy graduate whose parents were in charities. They were nonprofits, has the ability to come out and suddenly buy real estate and understand it. I want to know like how you formed. If we go into the high end stuff, how you got it to the millions.
Yeah. So I'll drop it in very fast here for the audience. Basically, I used real estate as an entry point strategy because I couldn't get capital, but I was able to cobble together money here and there and leverage line of credit off friends of mine. So I had a brother who's still a partner of mine, actually. He's passed now, but he's a great partner. So I would say listeners to just choose partners well early, but he was an awesome partner. And then I had another partner who's actually still with me, Dan French, and he's still crushing things, actually. But these guys were kind of critical. So I was able to use their credit and their, you know, a little bit of their cash, hustle together, cobble together assets here and there. And within about, say, 2 to 3 years, was able to put a portfolio together. But I'll get to the bad part of the story quickly for the audience. I did very well in my first 2 years, but I didn't really do well because I was good. I did well because the market was ridiculously overpriced and moving fast upwards. But then I hit the Great Recession.
And I'm sorry, we're going too fast for me. I want to understand this. You're a guy who just decided, you know what, I'm going to buy a four house unit. I'm going to rent it to four different individuals. It was doing well. You kept doing more of those and they kept doing better and better. And the only reason that you did well was because you had access to money through friends and the market was heating up. Is that right?
I mean, you know, I didn't have access to a lot of money. So I was cobbling together $1,000 here and there. So I didn't really have access to capital, but I was able to, when you get into business, unless you already know what you're doing, I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I read a ton of books, did all this type of stuff, but I didn't have access to podcasts, which are now available. It was about 14 years ago. So I jumped in, didn't know what I thought I knew what I was doing at this time, but you got to get in the game, you know? So I did get in the game about 2 years in or about 3 years in, 2007, 2008 hit, and the Great Recession came, but I was highly leveraged because I didn't have a lot of equity. So I had to use a lot of debt from the bank. But this ended up clobbering me in the downturn, and I barely, you know, came out of that alive. I mean, I was at Harvard Law School actually at the time, trying to get the Harvard network in order to use that for furthering my purposes of getting capital, making moves. Ultimately, I wanted to figure out the way I can have the biggest impact of people through business, but I kind of had to hack my way into it. You know, so that's how I got in this position at this time. This is like 10 years ago. So just as I went, I'll give you the quick version. And
I don't want the quick version.
So
no, quick version. Okay. We got an hour. I want to take time. You're here because I want to learn from you. So you had, how many properties would you say you had and how much debt would you say you had when you went to Harvard Law School? And as you said, you didn't go to Harvard Law School because you wanted to learn law necessarily and be a lawyer. You wanted to get that network because you knew that would help in your business. But give me a sense, how much debt, how many properties, just to get a sense of the height and the low.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't like to get in, I'm not going to get into specifics.
Ballpark. Andrew, we're but talking I'll give about you, like $1 million. I mean, $100 million.
It was in the millions, and I mean,
okay,
it was in the millions, and I definitely, you know, I ate it pretty hard. I mean, I was doing fine. I really felt that I was really on top of the world. I was, you know, knew what I was doing. And then when the Great Recession started hitting, I felt it before really anybody else felt it, because what happens is the economy starts, you know, constricting. And rentals, if you have rentals, you start feeling it in different ways. Vendors have problems. Maybe they fall out on you. Maybe they start demanding things on you, or you don't get payments you were expecting. But for me, since I was highly levered, if you have a lot of debt, you just feel that pinch much quicker. So I felt it so quickly, and that caused me to react, which probably saved me from ultimately going under in a bankruptcy or something, because I was able to react so quickly to it because of how painful it was. But I did a number of, I would say, pretty dumb things during that time period, which, you know, there's never going to be, I mean, there'll be another crash, but maybe not as big as this one was. But generally, you want to keep your head together. And during this time period, I started getting, you know, somewhat frantic. I was like, all right, I knew I wasn't going to give up one way or the other, but I was starting to feel like I was going to lose my hair. I had Harvard Law School, like the deans, and people were saying, hey, you're not going to class. You know, I wasn't going to go to class, really. I wasn't planning to go to class anyways. But especially now that I was having like this type of existential issue was happening, I didn't really, you know, what's the point? If I come out of Harvard Law School, what are they going to pay me? I'm going to pay off this thing for like 50 years. So I had to figure out what to do, you know? So that was kind of the position I was in. Ultimately, I was able to, you know, negotiate my way out of the situation, but I lost everything basically that I put together. And I started from zero, or maybe slightly negative zero, because I took out loans from friends at this time. So I was like, hey, I started calling like close friends. I was like, hey, I need a little bit of money to float things.
And float things meaning just so you can get by personally, pay the rent for yourself.
Pay the rent, also pay off bills, stuff like that. Because I was starting to go negative. I drained all my, I had reserves set up, you know, and I started draining through that in the Great Recession. Then I started taking out loans, I mean, from friends. And I was like, hey, I need some money. And these are people that can't lose the money. I'm from upstate New York. You know, these are, you know, people, hardworking class people, and I was borrowing money from them. I mean, I'll give you an example. My sister called me one time. This was around Christmas too. I didn't stop working. I was working around the clock till I got this situation figured out. But basically it was a real tough time, but I learned the lessons of business in a very hard knock way during this time period. And I would say, well, what bottom line is I ended up coming through it, but to give you an idea of the stress levels of it, which sometimes I don't even like talking about this stuff. And actually for even maybe 2 to 3 years after, I just wouldn't talk about it. I would just say, hey, I'm not talking about this, because it would make me go back to the experience where I'd feel like my hair was like, you know, going to fall out or something. Cause I remember like the tingling, you feel like your scalp's tingling. You're not able to sleep as well. But anyways, I turned the corner psychologically where I realized, you know what, like things are all right, you know? And I met my partners and I were having some beef, you know, we were beefing with each other, like blaming each other. Hey, it's your fault. Why aren't you doing this? This was starting to happen too. And we are friends. These are great guys. So we ended up meeting together for beers and we laughed and have a good time. So listen, we opened it up like, listen, friendship comes first and we're going to figure it. I told him, listen, I'm going to figure this out. We're going to come through this. I got us in this situation and I'm going to pull us out of this damn thing, but I don't know how I'm going to do that. So I don't have a clear path right now, but I'm going to figure this out for you guys. And I got you, man. But like right now, let's have a good time, because we're at each other's throats for like 2 months, you know?
Yeah.
And that was it. I mean, we kind of turned that corner. I mean, to give you an idea, my sister called me one time and she said, you know, you better not lose, one of the relatives' money, because I had borrowed money from someone during this time period. And I was like, I know I'm not going to lose the money. Don't worry about it. All right. And what I ended up doing was I did lose all the money. So, but I paid everybody back with compounded interest like 3 years or 4 years later. I had to earn it all back in. So that's why I say when I came out, I did lose everything, but I actually was in the hole. But I wasn't in the hole in millions at that point. I was in the hole in a way I could like pull myself out. So
let me pause again and just make sure that I understand
of,
this.
This is
what did you do to?
And it kind of totally closed the loop on it, though. Andrew,
no, you were closing.
This
wait,
is why I'm.
Before we close loops, I'm not getting enough specifics. So all I'm hearing is things were really hard, bad recession. I got into debt. I won't tell you how much I had or what we had. And then we turned things around and things are good. And I learned a lesson. Great. That's not as useful as here's what I negotiated. Here's the way I negotiated. Here's the outcome. Even if you can't get into specifics, the understanding of how you can go from owing a bunch of money to undoing that is useful.
Yeah, I mean, so you've got to think about from the other side, the other party's standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. So everybody on the other side in the Great Recession, they wanted to get out of the situation as well. But they didn't want to be left in the lurch where, you know, hey, sorry guys, this didn't work out, man. I'm out of here. Peace, you know? But they didn't want you coming out ahead if they didn't come out ahead. So you had to think about it from their perspective. So that's what I did. And the arrangement was basically I had to sell everything and manage it myself until it was totally sold. So, and that's what I did. I just basically had to agree to sell all the assets. But for me, that was a win because it's, you know, the only thing, this is kind of like an internal thing, but the only thing better than being, you know, the only thing better than being a negative millionaire is just being just broke.
Yeah.
So when you're just broke, you don't owe people all this damn money. So when I kind of shed myself of that situation, I felt like, man, this is amazing. I mean, I was pretty burnt, you know, but I was like, man, I'm going to come back with even more
fraud. I still don't have enough specifics. What you're saying is you want to take care of their interest and not show them that you're walking away. When you say they, are we talking about the bank who lent you money?
Yeah. So
the bank who lent you money,
So if you're, what ended up happening in the Great Recession, all the properties just dipped in value, you know, whatever. Everybody knows what happened. Like 50% of value just dropped right over in the course of, say, 12 months.
So what did you do specifically?
So what I did was I ended up talking to, I had to negotiate with the banks and say, listen, you know, I want to get out of this. And they were like, you know, no. And I said, well, you know, what do you guys want, basically? And they were like, well, we don't want this stuff. You've got to handle it and you've got to sell everything. And I said, well, why don't, you know, obviously I said, why don't I keep it? I really, you know, you have this emotional attachment to all your work. You know, I worked like 2 to 3 years without sleeping. Basically I was sleeping on floors, keeping the cost so low. I, you know, I didn't even have like a car. I was like totally just doing everything bare minimum cost, trying to save everything, dumping it back in.
You said to them, I will sell all this and then give you whatever's left and I won't owe you anything. Even if it's less than what I owe you, if I get back less than I owe you, then I won't owe you anything.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and that was enough, but I mean, I had to manage everything, sell everything. And then that's it. You start from, at that point, they agree to, I'm not saying this will always work, by the way, but in a situation, and that's why the listeners need to kind of discern what they're hearing, right? Today, in today's economy, no, that's obviously not going to work. But in a great recession, you know, no one really has a choice.
But what did work? I still don't know what worked, Peter. What we're saying that worked is you went to the banks and said, I'm going to sell for whatever I get. You take what you get and I won't owe you anymore. Is that it?
Basically, I said, look, I'm going to sell for maximum market value.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's it.
Yeah. You're only going to get market price on things. But the deal was I had to manage and sell everything. And in that case, then they would say, okay, great, you're out, but you're not out until everything's totally sold. So that was basically the agreement I set up with the bank.
You had to keep manage it until it's all sold. You had to make sure that the tenants.
Yeah. So maybe this took about 6, 7, 8 months of work.
Okay.
And you know, you're working for free, but you're not, to me, it's freedom I was working for, like a freedom fighter, rather than, you know, profit. Cause you know, you're not going to get anything at the end. Right. So. Okay.
But they still said to you, you won't owe us anything. Just sell for market value, manage these properties until it's sold. You won't owe us anything afterwards. We're not going to ding your credit.
I mean, some of this stuff was on, you know, non-disclosure agreements and everything else, but I'm speaking in broad terms here. But generally, yeah, I mean, the market's down. I agreed to certain terms I had to hit. I did hit my side. They agreed to do something in return, which was I'm out after it. So it was more like, hey, you swallow these pills and do all this stuff and then we're good. But in no circumstance are you out without doing these things. And that was the deal I set up. And the other stuff is in some, you know, you agree to non-disclosures and everything else. Cause I'm sure they don't want people thinking that they can go set up something like this, you know, but this is not a repeatable situation.
And what
anyway,
they were trying to avoid happen was you say, look, I'm bankrupt. You guys take the properties. I can't owe you anything. I'm walking away. And then it's all on them to deal with it. Is that right? That's the downside they were protecting against.
Also, you know, I know the properties better than everyone else. I know the assets better than everyone else. I can maximize the value. I was running it super low. I mean, they're smart enough. I was running it very low cost and keeping cash flow pretty high on the revenue side and able to send them a lot of money every month. So they knew that if they took this over, they couldn't sustain it. But it was not really a hopeful situation for me or for them. So it was basically what's the best of the world for them. And if I can attain that, they'll take that. And that's how I set it up.
Was it mostly residential that you owned?
Yeah, it was all residential.
Under a dozen or over a dozen properties?
It was about 24. Wow. So, I mean, I had about, you know, I had about maybe 40 loans all personally signed. So it was a real
rise.
Like, you know.
Over how many years?
I mean, it was probably about 2 years, 2 to 3 years.
Okay. All right. Wow. That's super fast. All right. Let's come back in a moment
so
after
if
I talk.
If you see in the company Trustwork, if you see some of the, in the virtues, I bake in stuff, but this stuff comes out of my experience where I say calculated boldness.
Yeah.
Because being bold is good, but if you're not calculated, it's kind of, you can get yourself in a bad position.
Right,
swinging too hard.
The worst year for real estate was 2008. 2010, just 2 years later, you come back with this new business. We're going to talk about it in a moment. First, let me talk about my first sponsor. It is, every time I say the name of the company, nobody cares. Here's who people care about. A guy named James Altucher. And the reason people care about James Altucher is, boy, this guy's made a name for himself. I remember opening up the New York Times. I hardly ever open up the paper version of the Times. I somehow opened it up. One of those inside sections, I don't even give a rip which one because I don't read the paper Times. Here's what I cared about. A photo of this guy going into a taxi. They're championing him as the modern day hero of gurudom because he gave away everything that he had. He decided he wasn't even going to have his own house and he was just going to like travel and live in people's homes for a while and had a bunch of quirks. Like in the photo, he was carrying a suitcase full of $2 bills because he discovered that people value $2 bills much more than they value two individual $1 bills. So it's this kind of thing. And he built a name for himself by writing and publishing books. And he said, you know what? I shouldn't be the only one to do this. There are other people who should be publishing books and I could help them do it. And I was trying to figure out why. Why does he care about it? What's the benefit to my audience? Why would anyone in my audience even care about it? And then I met and got to know this guy, Nathan Lustig. When I wanted to go to Chile and interview entrepreneurs in South America, this guy literally wrote the book about how to do business as a venture capitalist, as a startup in South America, examined every one of these countries. I read the book cover to cover, and what I saw was he basically took old blog posts and podcasts and turned them into this great compilation that was a book and felt more valuable than a set of blog posts and a set of podcasts. And because he did that, he had not just more reputation with me. And yes, I was willing to fly in and trust him and his team to hook me up with interviews and do whatever they told us to do, but others, investors, entrepreneurs, startups, people there and people everywhere who invested in his company took him more seriously because of this book. And that's what James Altucher is trying to do. Now, this is kind of a quirky thing. And frankly, James Altucher is kind of a quirky thing. You may not have woken up this morning thinking, I want to publish a book. I need to publish anything. You might have just said, you know what? I want to listen to Andrew. Let Andrew do the publishing. Let Andrew do the work. But I'm going to suggest to you that you should hook up with what James is doing and get a read on what he's doing. This could actually change your reputation and change your life. The guy knows how to lead you through things in a way that just makes sense. And I kind of like how open he is about stuff. Like I'll tell you, Peter, in my interview with him, he told me that he wanted to kill himself. I said, how? He literally he said, Andrew, I don't think I should talk about it. I said, yeah, this is Mixergy. You should talk about it. He went through step by step how he was going to kill himself, like gave basically the process. I go, this guy's intense. Anyway, he went from there to these great heights. A lot of it is through, I'm going to say 99% of it is through publishing. And the other part is that quirky personality of his that he's publishing about. If you want to know more about this, he's not even giving you a website address. He's recognizing that most of us are on phones right now. He's saying, Andrew, try this. Tell your people to pull up their phones in the text app. They should text this number, 50445. That's a number you should send a message to. Send a message to that number and the message should just say, Andrew. All right. So instead of texting a friend, instead of texting some random business, you're going to text 50445 and text them the name Andrew. They will follow up with you. And I promise they're not going to send you a bunch of spam in your text. I actually didn't like the messages they sent the first time. I said, nope, this is not good for my audience. They spent time with our team and readjusted them so that it's perfect for you. So I won't let them spam you, but I also won't let them send you stuff that's not perfectly written for you. They did it great for you. If you're listening to me, you should go check out what James is doing. Pull up your phone, the messaging app right now. Dial this number, 50445, and text the name Andrew. I wish that 50445 was a little bit more melodic or had some rhythm to it. 50445. Who's going to remember it? Maybe people remember it. I wish I had a better memory. 50445. Text the name Andrew to them. Peter, how'd you get started then with InvestRes?
Yeah, with Trustwork, you mean, right?
No, let's go to a little bit of InvestRes and then go into Trustwork.
Okay, I got you. Yep.
Just a bit of a taste of what you were doing there.
Yeah, I'll give you some timelines here, more or less between 2008 and 2010. Economies crashed. I don't know how familiar they are with what happened, but it was a great recession. Economy dropped, something along the line, not as bad as the Great Depression in the 1930s, but you know, it was a pretty systemic collapse across the board. While that happened, it created somewhat of a depressed morale with a lot of people. I also myself got, you know, like I just told everybody, got pretty well, you know, my head handed to me, learned some hardcore lessons, but was able to come out and fight another day. So that was the kind of the key position I was in my mind. And I also felt somewhat of almost like a resentment, sort of like what I went through. I'm like, I'm coming out even harder now because I felt like I really needed to prove myself and I was going to be even more successful as a result somehow and take these lessons and come at it and be even more, you know, more aggressive than I was before. And I was pretty aggressive before
more
as well.
Aggressive.
But this time
you didn't
I was
become
like,
a wuss after that. I don't think most people would have come back bolder. They would have come back scared. That's impressive about your personality. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it probably is a personality trait, but who knows, right? But either way, I had this determination. I was going to come out even more hardcore than ever. And I did so in 2009, 2010, but unfortunately I was still at, or fortunately in my position, unfortunately I was still at Harvard Law School during this time period for the 3 years. And I couldn't really get anything going because I couldn't get anybody to give me any capital. I had lined up some deals. The deals basically fell through. I didn't get them in contract because I couldn't line up capital because I'd find very wealthy people. I'd go and find them and say, hey, listen, this is my background. I know what I'm doing. And they would, you know, sit down with me. They'd hear me out and be very interested. And then the deal killer would be like, wait, hold on. Are you at Harvard Law School? And I would say, listen, I am, but I'm telling you, it's not what you think. You know, I got this. I can handle this thing I'm doing plus finish that. And they were just like, it never worked, like zero, no traction. So I just kind of gave up on that. I did a CPA exam. I did the CPA license. I didn't have any accounting background during that same time period. Because I couldn't really get any traction. I did do some deals though, but it was on a smaller scale. I did maybe a few million or something like that of buys during this time period. But I had lined up like a $60 million deal, which I could not get done. In Boston, which if I had done it, I would have, you know, tripled my money on it.
You found residential properties that you could buy at a deal that you felt good about. All you needed was money to put a down payment so that you can buy the properties and then rent them out. And you couldn't find people to give you money for the down payment because you were still in school. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. In Boston, I was in Cambridge and I hustled together a bunch of properties at the same time owned by the same owner. So it could have been one deal. Because Boston has a lot of smaller properties, similar to San Francisco. You know, you just can't, they're like maybe three a unit, a duplex or a four unit. So I lined up about 60 million of these things in a string owned by one owner. And I basically got this guy to meet with me. I mean, he was pretty pissed off when I finally got in front of me. He called me, he's like, you know, you're an a-hole. And I said, you know, I don't know why am I an a-hole. He said, you're just the most persistent person. He's like, what the hell do you want? I said, well, let's see. And I said, I'm interested in buying your properties. He's like, you're going to buy your properties with what kind of money? I mean, this is like the worst time ever. But I knew he must be interested because everybody was, right? Because it was like everybody was hurting. So I said, and this was me on the rebound. So I was like, man, I'm coming after this thing. So I said, listen, I don't have the capital right now, but I'm pretty confident I can get it. So I was able to line up all the deals, everything else. And he happened to be all right about it. He heard me out and he realized I knew what I was talking about in business. But then I couldn't get I lined up the capital sources, but I couldn't get them closed. They just weren't having it. They weren't buying into my, you know, Harvard Law School is not as bad as it seems type a line, which is true, honestly. But, and I could have got it done, I'm telling you, 100%, but they just weren't
Peter,
believing
what do you
it.
Like about, I've never bought real estate before. What do you like about these properties? Tell me how you as an experienced person thinks about these properties and what excited you about them.
So, I mean, what excited me was I felt drawn to get into business in the biggest way possible and to try to use it as a vehicle to serve other people. And that's kind of my personal mission that I keep written in my pocket is to serve people in business. Mm-hmm. And because before this, I thought about literally maybe going into missions or something. I was very idealistic and I still am, but I couldn't get into business. I didn't know anything about business. My parents are teachers and they're awesome people, but they just don't know anything about business. My siblings were teachers as well. So real estate allowed me the ability and to jump in with people not looking at me so much. They would look at the property. This was the advantage to say, oh, there's a good deal you found, you know? So
what makes a good deal for you? What did you like about this $60 million set of buildings what was it that you like about them?
So this goes more into an investment thinking, right? So I've read a lot of books, right? But I also took some hard knocks and But by 2008, 2009, I had really consumed a lot of material and consumed a lot of experience and a very fast pace in about 3 years. Almost a lifetime of pain in some reason. I had one of the highs. I mean, I'll give you a funny story. I mean, I remember being at I don't even go to horse races. I don't know why we did this, but I went to the horse races in Saratoga with two of my friends were there with their partners. And we kind of acted like we were rich guys, you know, we're like, oh, we're so successful. This is 2006, 2007. And I was thinking, man, I can't do nothing wrong. I'm just so good at business, you know? But when the market's going up, everyone thinks they're good. Similar in tech, right? In San Francisco, when things are booming, everyone thinks they're so good. It's natural. They're natural abilities. But when the market goes down is when you find who's really good, who's got the grit and determination, and it kind of shakes out everything else, right? So this is why I thought I was good, but I wasn't good. I sucked at managing. I didn't know a lot of stuff. I didn't know how to pick people well. I had tons of problems. I'd pick certain people I thought I could trust. And then when I started having problems financially, I started digging in. These guys aren't even showing up to work and stuff. Sometimes just was not good at oversight. I had no accountability systems put in place. I had this kind of thing where I thought, you know, I hired this guy. He's going to get it done. I trust him. You know, he trusts me. No way. It doesn't work like that. And I'm a pretty shrewd guy, but it's still, I thought we had aligned incentives. So,
and with the $16 billion sets of buildings, what was it that you liked about them? What was it that drew calling the guy?
Yeah, there was nothing about those deals in particular, those real estate deals that seemed attractive, particularly. What was attractive was that it was a depressed market where everybody was psychologically down. And I knew that this was not going to stay the same forever. So I figured this was a shot for me to get in there and nail it, because people were afraid in 2008. It's hard for people to remember this, but in 2008, 2009, 2010, people were talking about a double dip recession. The recession was already horrible, right? And they were talking about the possibility for a double dip. How the hell much lower could it go? So I was thinking about it it can't go that much lower, even another dip. I mean, the country was like absolutely, you know, getting wrecked. And really the government was stepping in and keeping things floating. And
so that's Peter, you were just saying, look, this is a lot of properties in a depressed market. It's got to go back up. Got it. It's more like me buying the S&P 500 in a down stock market than me loving any specific stock. That's what you were thinking, right?
Pretty much, I would say. I mean, maybe a little bit more sophistication because I was targeting Boston, which is Cambridge, a pretty durable area. It's got Harvard, MIT, Boston's economy is strong. Okay. So it wasn't that basic, but in general, the primary driving force behind it was market down. No one wants to make a play. They're irrationally negative about it. So I'm just less negative than them, or I was positive actually, that I felt things would go well in the long term. So I made the play while everyone else is down. Now that deal didn't go through. So that was a failure, right? On execution. But this kind of shows why it's important to just make plays anyways, right? Because the capital sources I came to, a number of them said, hey, you know, I'm not doing this, but I really like your style. And I think that you've got what it takes. So when you get out in 2010, contact me. So that was my capital sources when I got out. So I came out in 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and I bought, you know, $500 million. I have $1.5 billion of real estate assets, right? That came out of the tail of getting whacked. I got whacked, but then I had a failure, but I identified capital sources. I got these capital sources I talk about hustle, right? I mean that in a good sense.
Kind of
just working really hard and being scrappy, being opportunistic. So what I did was I identified who's going to work well with me. I need somebody that can make a decision fast. I needed people who made their own money, basically first time earners type people, understood me best. So from there, I tried to figure out, well, who would have money? Well, generally people who own businesses or started businesses, but then these guys are actually hard to find. And they're also tend to be pretty hard-edged people in general. So when you go to approach them, they're going to basically tell you to beat it. So you have to come in and knowing that they're going to tell you to get out, and then you're just going to stay in and keep coming in a pleasant way. And that's how I got to them. And that's a very summarized version of how I got the capital sources, but generally.
Who's an example of somebody who you got that way, just through your hustle, because you knew who would have that, who would have the money to invest?
Yeah. So this is a good example. And there's like 100 of these examples, right? But here's one. I was at a friend of mine wanted me to come to a fundraiser. It was a political thing. I'm not into politics, but because my friend was hosting it, I said, okay, I'll just go anyways. when I was there, I was, you know, basically wasting my time and having a drink. And a guy that was next to me said, "Hey, oh, that guy over there leases properties to Harvard University." And I said, "Man, anybody who leases Harvard tries to buy out everybody." So in the area, I just know this, right? So I said, "Man, if this guy's leasing properties to Harvard, I mean, they couldn't buy him out. He's got to have some serious, you know, holding power." So I went up to him and I said, "Hey, you know, I'm interested in meeting with you." He was like, "Okay." I saw him give a card to someone. So I said, "Can I have a card as well?" And he said, you know, he was like, "Well, you know, who the hell are you?" And I ended up getting his card. And I was nice to him. And I ended up contacting him pretty much every month. I would just send him a text or an email. And I kept it pretty pleasant. And then finally, he was like, "Meet me at such and such place. You've got like 15 to 20 minutes." And that's it. So I met him, explained what I'm about. I was trying to get him for this one deal that I mentioned to you. That was a no, that didn't work out, but he did meet me on a follow-up. And that's when I told him my full situation, and he couldn't get past the part that I was still at school. So he said, "Screw that. Law school's supposed to be hard. I'm not doing it." But he said he was very interested in actually doing some deals. So that was one example. But for that one example, I've got, you know, 10 others that didn't work out. I chased them all the way to the end and they failed. So,
okay. And eventually you ended up raising some money. You started buying residential real estate. I saw a press release that you guys sent out just a few weeks ago. I guess not your company anymore. You found a CEO, you handed the reins over to him, and you moved on to create Trustwork, which is your vision for the world that you want to live in and the world that you want others to live in. But anyway, I saw this thing. You guys closed 148 unit multifamily acquisition of Oakwood Apartments in Sarasota. And that's the type of stuff that you guys are buying. You're buying homes and you're renting them out to people who live there. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. Yep. And I still do own the company, and I'm the executive chairman, but there's not a board. I'm basically act as the board. So I like the company. I'm not going to sell it. I still think real estate's a good, I mean, look, the Trustwork, actually the target customer is real estate entrepreneurs. People own properties. It's looking to tool them up, because in the long term, Trustwork is trying to be and is going to be the platform for entrepreneurship, where everyone, because I look at, and you actually touched on this when we first started, is I see every person that's out there as needing to entrepreneurialize themselves. They need to become an entrepreneur. They can't just be a, you know, 9-to-5 worker. And you hear about people doing side hustles, this and that. But even in your main hustle, your main work, you need to entrepreneurialize yourself. You've got to think, you know, opportunistically. You've got to get almost somewhat obsessive about figure out what your passion is, what your point of, you know, focus is, and learn as much about that as you can, and figure out how you can get an edge, how you can get a competitive advantage. You know, and that's what Trustwork's about in the long term. So any listeners that are out there, to set up a profile on there and start investing in yourself, that's what they can do. But right now, the platform's so new. But the idea, the first thing we're targeting is real estate entrepreneurs. So if there's people out there that have a property, or they're doing Airbnbs or renting them out, or they just own a home, they could start posting on Trustwork to get jobs done on there. Because and this kind of ties into how my background, what I saw was all these things that weren't really flowing well inside the industry. And early, you mentioned I was a laborer. I started out in construction. So this also explains why I picked real estate. Because I knew some of that stuff. Now, there's construction guys know way more than me, but I know, I know probably about 10 to 20 times more than another technology entrepreneur. So I targeted this spot because I know it. I know it from my gut. I know it from my instincts, and I know the people really well. And I also built a company operationally through there. I didn't come through the finance side. Most people in my position come through finance. You know, like they worked at Goldman Sachs, they worked at Blackstone, and they came in. I worked in construction, and I kind of came through and I ran all operations on the ground. So, and I kind of, that's how I came through that. But that's also how I had superior revenues or cash flows. I would just keep things tight, you know?
Okay.
But as I was doing it, I saw tons of these inefficiencies and I saw the career opportunities for people there needed to get restructured, and the entire industry needs to be restructured. So the first play is to disrupt real estate. And that's what we're going after in Trustwork. That's our first entry point. That's what we're doing.
Let me take a moment to talk about my second sponsor, and then we're going to come back. And you don't know how to develop. You don't know how to code. How did you code is the first question I'll ask you. How you got that first version up, and then how you got users and so on. But first, the sponsor is a company called HostGator. If you're out there and you need a website hosted, just go to HostGator.com/Mixergy. You know what? Period. End of story. HostGator.com/Mixergy. So, Peter, I'm coming right back. you didn't know how to code. You found through your Harvard connection, I think, you found somebody who was good at computer science. Am I right?
You know, when I was starting Trustwork, you mean?
Yeah.
Are you talking about when I was at Harvard? Well, when I was at Harvard, I did a side gig, which I kind of got exposed to some of the power of technology. Uh-huh. And that was sort of a gig to get some revenue coming in, where I recruited a guy from computer science. He helped me out. But this was a small thing, but it gave me a little window. So later on, as I got the Trustwork idea, I contacted him again. Now, he ended up not coming in, but we were friends. We stayed friends, actually, since like 4 years. And we're still actually friends. But he told me, he's like, I know what you're calling about. You're probably trying to recruit me. Because for some reason, he could tell by my tone. And I said, listen, you know, his name is Peter. So I said, Pete, listen, it's not like that fully, but I am looking for some knowledge and who's the best guy. And he said, I'm in finance and doing investments. I'm out of computer science. So I said, give me the best guy you know. So he did, from his computer science days. And I contacted that guy. He actually worked in the other company now, but I pulled him down. He was at Bridgewater at the time doing technology for them, but I pulled him down to my operations and I went over with him some of the idea. I mapped it all out on a whiteboard showing how I wanted the flows. I wanted to restructure the industry.
Yeah, what was the vision? Entrepreneurship. You said, look, all these people who are working on these properties, they need to think more entrepreneurially. What was the vision actually?
So these things kind of patch together almost like a mosaic, right? And as I start, the initial baby versions of it came to me as then I saw, you know, this problem. I saw the turnover process, the way it was done, the routing of all the labor, mm-hmm. and the connection of the labor was so complex and so inefficient, but could be much better done through technology. Then I saw a different problem, which I could no longer, as I got bigger, make as aggressive of moves, because I didn't know the reputation and the information about my own people in my company. Because the company has 450 employees. So when I was like 15, 20 people, you know, say when I had 100 employees even, right? I call them teammates actually, but 100 teammates. I could figure out who's who and I could deploy capital like lightning fast. Because I knew all these guys, I was friends with them and I hang out with them, have beers, whatever, you know? But as we got to 200 or so, it became very murky for me. And I couldn't do it anymore because I just was too risky. So it started slowing us down a little bit. Now, we still did good and we still made moves and kept growing and growing, right? But it slowed me down dramatically. I mean, I jumped from, it doesn't matter about that. But bottom line is, this was a problem, right? Boom, reputation problem. Then I saw maintenance as sort of a dead end industry. I had maintenance staff as well. I still do in the other company. But I saw it as I couldn't give them ladders of opportunity upwards. Now, when you have a sign like when you have an industry like that, it needs to be recreated to allow people to move upwards. And then I also saw how inefficient and how much better it would be solved all the maintenance jobs if we had a marketplace. Then I saw construction, and I already knew all these things anyways, but I saw them in play. And I said, man, that could be done so much better as well. So this is kind of how I got the patchwork in my brain. But then when I got this idea mapped out, I flew this guy down. We mapped it out. He said, we could do this. I said, okay, we could definitely do this. Yeah, absolutely, this can be done. And I said, all right, this guy, he's in my company right now. Actually, his name is Chris. Extremely smart guy. Mm-hmm. Knows computer science very well. Says I can do it. Okay, I can do this. And I said, all right. I took a little time to think about it. I took maybe like 3-4 days on my own. I had an office where no one would go to. It was separated from everyone else. It only had whiteboards and no internet. I'd just go there and just like zone out, map everything out on the boards, right? And I was like, man, I think like this could be my opportunity to really impact on the global level. And I was like, I've got something that could go very big here, maybe, but I don't know anything about outside the USA. Inside the USA, I know entrepreneurship pretty well because I had been an entrepreneur. I'd been through the ringer. And I knew the tools and things that are needed, network you need, the capital, everything else, right? But I didn't know the other countries. And that's why I went to the 85 countries, is because I realized I had a gap.
So why didn't you just say, you know what, I know the U.S. really well. I'll stick with the U.S. We'll do others later on. Why did it have to be you flying out all over the world to understand the rest of the world before you could build this up?
Because in my heart, I wanted to serve everyone everywhere. And I wanted to have the biggest possible impact in my life.
This goes back to your parents. Period, right? Your parents, I mentioned earlier, they were do-gooders. They tried to get you to do good as a kid and you did it, but you didn't fully go along with it. What was it that your parents did that they tried to bring you into?
Well, no, I did go along with it. I mean, I ended up, generally I had obedience issues in school where the administration, I never really I always thought it was them, you know, but as I got older, I realized it's me.
But they wanted you to go along for their charitable events. And you said, no. And in retrospect, you've told our producer, someone on your team told our producer, I was kind of a selfish 15-year-old kid. And eventually you recognized what they were trying to beat into you or try to introduce you to, which is do good in the world. And it did penetrate your, I don't know that I could call you selfish at that age, but it did penetrate your skull.
Yeah, no, well, here's the thing. I never had a rebellious instinct around charity. Never. That was probably a miscue from whoever's on my team that talked to you guys. That was never a problem. I was always actually, I used to go with my father when I was a kid. As my earliest memories, and he would go out and try to help out. He would pay for people's electric, try to get people who are on the poorer side of things, delivering food to them, spending time with them, helping them out. He also spent his career focused on special ed. So special education, trying to help out using intelligence testing and things like that to help people to play to their strengths. Mm-hmm. So I actually really loved that experience as a kid. And as I got to about 15, I was walking out of church one day and I was thinking, the reading was something about whatever you did to the least my people that you did to me. And I remember thinking, man, I don't do a damn thing for anybody. I was kind of I had like a bald head. I'm like 15. I used to keep my head bald sometimes when I was focused. And I was like kind of a bit of a numbnut. It probably still am to in certain regards. But as I was walking, I said, man, I got to do something for somebody. And I turned around. I thought, let me spend a little time and pray for a second. And there was a nun there who was kind of famous for serving people. She had like 500 people she'd serve and help out. So I went up to her and I said, hey, I want to help out with whatever you do. And she looked at me like I was like a ghost. Like, who is this guy? You know? But she knew my father. So that ended up being, she ended up bringing me under her wing and showing me kind of here. She gave me some people to take care of, like kind of go visit.
Yeah.
And so that's the charity kind of angle or
that's what I'm getting at.
My other rebellious side. I have the other rebellious side in school where I would have like corner seats all year or suspensions or whatever. Like
just basically but that's what I'm getting at. Yes. I see that rebelliousness and I could see how it helped you get people to invest in you, to listen to you, to sell their properties to you. I also see this do-gooder part that's been looking to come out, and that's why you came up with Trust Work, or it's a big reason for it and why you had to go travel the world to understand it. Did you learn anything as you visited, what do I see here in my notes, 85 different countries? Did you see anything? Did you learn anything that changed you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's probably just so much stuff that I came across that changed the way I think about things. It would be impossible for me to just download it all right now. But I mean, I went to 85 countries, but I also went to, you know, all the major cities. So when I was in China, I went to like 12 cities or something. In India, I went to, you know, 10 or 11, and I had about 1,000 meetings and I took 1,600 pages of notes. So I have notes on every city with like all the, I use the Harvard network. I used Georgetown Network. I used another Tiger 21 YPO network I have. Plus, I would try to engage people on the streets and tour guides, try to get every tranche of income levels and try to understand what are the problems in business or in life that they face. And then I could extrapolate upwards, abstracting up what's the differences between the American experience and entrepreneurship and their experience. And then I could get a mental model in my brain better. Like, how do I create Trust Work so I can serve all these countries, you know?
Okay. Before we started, I asked you about the revenue. You told me in private what it was. And then you said, and I asked some follow-up questions, which were about how did you get that revenue? And what you helped me understand was you guys didn't just create this platform. You're also on the platform with three different businesses. What are these three different businesses that I can go to Trust Work right now and hire people from?
So the target customer is real estate entrepreneur, person who owns a property or a homeowner, right?
Yep.
So that's it. We have that. That's our target because you have to optimize for something in business, right?
Yep.
You have to produce a product and deliver it to someone in a certain way. And the way that we deliver product or something that someone needs is if you need maintenance, if you need to get your apartment turned over or you need construction done, we want to be the choice for you that you can get it done there. But because Trust Work is so new, then how do you just like snap your fingers and all of a sudden you have all the contractors on there and construction guys are down to do the work and the property owners on, right? So the way we're solving that is we've built three companies on the platform on Trust Work because businesses could build companies onto Trust Work. The future of the vision of it is businesses could run off of Trust Work, similar how people use, you know, how developers use AWS to run their servers on. We want people to use Trustwork as almost their back end for their business. And eventually be able to get their capital. We're going to plug into banks, plug in insurance. The idea is extremely complex. So I won't blow everyone's mind here with that unnecessary detail. But zooming into today, we're solving for one pain point that I know very well. And I know better than any entrepreneur I know or any technology person. Well, any technology entrepreneur I know. There's guys in maintenance that know it way better than me. And construction guys own companies. They would 100% take me to school. So, but I know it better than these other, and I know it from the inside and the pain levels of what that real estate entrepreneur needs. So we're attacking three parts of what the need is in the area that we believe is most underserved, which is maintenance personnel or entrepreneurs in the maintenance side, construction, same thing, and the turnover process, which includes like painters, handyman that punch things out, could be people that specialize in countertops or cabinetry, flooring.
Because turnover for people, I never heard of turnover before, but you explained to me before that people who own real estate need this. The turnovers, all those little services that go into taking an apartment, for example, that was rented to someone and cleaning it up, painting it, fixing it up so that the next tenant could come in and have a good experience. And so you've said, look, these are the three different needs that people on our platform have. Before we wait for maintenance guys to come and establish themselves on our platform and turn people to come on and construct, we're just going to create these agents, these businesses. And so now you own those three businesses. They're on your platform. If I want turnover service because I own, say, an Airbnb in Austin, I might hire one of your people. But eventually what you're hoping is other people who do these services will say, hey, they're getting clients on this. I'll go put myself on this service. What do I have to lose? And then the more of those people come on, the more businesses come on, real estate professionals come on, and they're going to start being on your platform. That's the way you did it.
Yeah, exactly. And the markets, I also had to focus on specific markets because you need both sides on. You need a lot of vendors on, a lot of contractors on. You need liquidity, right? So it's like kind of like Uber. If you go to press for a car, you need density of like drivers. Otherwise, I don't need anything around, right?
Yep.
So I focus on Florida and Texas. Why Florida and Texas? Well, I know Florida and Texas pretty well. And I know that it's not as well served as California with technology. And business, it's very regulatory friendly, those states. And there's a lot of entrepreneurs that are under teched, and we're teching them up. You know, it's right now it's not the best experience on Trustwork, but it's good enough that we are, you know, getting millions of dollars in revenue coming through the rails. So people are spending money on it. They trust it enough. But it's going to get a lot better. And I would say in about 3, 6, 18 months, it's going to be 10 times better. Because right now we're under development. We're parallel pathing, developing a whole new interface and all the back end things. Because a lot of our first iterations that in the current iterations that's out was to test market and prove that it was going to work and start spinning up the initial vendors and entrepreneurs on both sides of it, which we've done. And now that we're figuring out a lot of the flows, now we're kind of writing those into, you know, more like putting those into pillars.
But I see it. I see who's bought from you guys. I guess the company name is called, what is it? The Turns. It's called Turns. That's the name of the business. And if I scroll down on their profile in your app, I can see that, for example, 2 hours ago, Samantha Koenig spent $87.50. She got medium punch list, Chateau Dijon, 2038. I'm guessing that's an address. I see that Tom Moyers 4 hours ago got painting at the park at Elland. And I get to see all the people who've actually hired your service. Am I right? Am I reading this stuff right?
Yeah, that's right. Those would probably be things that are under contract.
So what do you do the other way? How do you get, now that I see how you got the service providers on the platform, how did you get users? How did you get real estate owners to come on and start buying through your platform?
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing's ever linear, right? I mean, I won't get into how nonlinear my approach is here, but it's very nonlinear. So you'd be like, well, why are you doing it this way? You know, it would make more sense with where you want to go. You'd do it a different way. But you have to kind of go after markets that are underserved to get people on, right? Mm-hmm. So what we're doing is for homeowners and other people to get them on the platform, we're leveraging people who are either they just bought a house. So we target people who just bought a house because when you just buy a house, you have a laundry list of things you want to get done.
Okay.
So say you want to get, you spend like, there's data on this. I'm going to mess up the numbers, but I think you spend around, I'm not even going to say the numbers because I'm going to mess it up, but you spend a good amount of money right after you buy your house. So we look at transactional information using softwares or other research or connections to find out when people buy a house, and then we're targeting them to get them as the owner side. Now, the vendor side and the contractor side, the construction side, that side we're leveraging existing relationships we already have, and I've artificially kind of, I've created three companies that target and serve those homeowners, because getting construction guys to basically believe in the platform this quickly, I mean, they're just skeptical by nature. And they also, they don't have a very high vote of confidence when I have them talk to my software engineers. They don't feel like we're going to hit it for them. They feel like, why am I wasting my time on this call? And they do it as a favor for me. But then when I ask them feedback, they tell me, listen, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And I tell them, listen, well, that's the whole point of the call. And so I said, so the way I'm solving the problem on the vendor side, on the contractor side, is I've created three of these companies and they're running, but they're also proof of concept to these other construction companies to show them you can run a business on this platform as well and you can make millions of dollars doing it.
Okay.
And it's working right now, but this, getting the vendors, getting contractors on, that's difficult, but they also come on when they see the jobs. So it's both, you know, as I get the owners on.
You know what else seems to work for you guys?
Contractors get on.
It seems like you're still going for SEO. For example, if I did a search for Piranhas Hemet, I don't know what this woman, let me see who she is. She's on your platform. And so if I want to message her, first of all, if I do a search for her, the fifth link after Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, number five is her Trustwork profile. And so then that links me to your network where I could contact her. And if she was on the network more actively, I could see her skills and maybe hire her to paint my house or something. It feels like that's also something you've got going for you. I'm looking at your similar web traffic to get a sense of that. Am I right?
Yeah, I think so. But a lot of this is so early stage. I think right now it's SEO. We are doing that, but I think most of our wins right now, and this is going to change over time here, but most of our wins are coming from ground up referrals where we serve a homeowner that a realtor knew, a real estate agent knows and says, okay, these guys did a good job. Now the real estate agent could be a power agent, right? A power broker that closes like 30 deals a year. Now they turn around, they say, hey man, I got 30 deals for you guys. Now, right now we don't even have the capacity, and we're building fast to serve them because we don't have enough people on these three companies. But we're backed up on jobs that we could take, and that's what's happening. We get in there, we bang them out, because the realtor wants to tell their client, "Hey, you closed on this, and hey, we got this connection for you, and they'll take care of your work." Because that's a free giveaway to build up social capital. So this has been a good network for us to work through. And then the other one is that people tell other people, you know, even contractors say, hey, they usually tell people that are closer with them about it because some of them are a little bit competitive with each other. But homeowners generally, that the way we're getting them is, I think often, and I'm speaking a little bit off the cuff here, my business development guys who run Turton's Task and who run these three companies would know better. But even from when I've talked to them, they've told me a lot of how their volume's coming in. It's through this word of mouth or referral ground up. And that's good right now because our software is coming into place. We're figuring out things more and getting it to connect. And then later I'd spend more dollars, and I will spend more dollars on the top down strategies. It was like SEO and stuff like that and targeted digital marketing and stuff. I am doing some of that right now. And it's mainly in certain areas like Austin, Texas, or, you know, throughout Florida.
Do you still have personal guarantees at InvestRes, the investment properties?
No, absolutely not. No, I don't do that again. No, that was it. I mean, I never do that again after 2008. I mean, it's hard for the audience to understand how badly I got whooped, but I mean, I don't do that anymore. It's just not happening because
it's hard for me to understand. One of the things that I heard was that your brain doesn't register low points. You just don't think about them. You don't sweat them. It's not an issue. In fact, when you moved your team from San Francisco to Austin, it just didn't even register that they're going to have some downside because they have to deal with physically moving a team. You're that optimistic. Did you get to a low where you doubted yourself? Did you get to a low when that money went away that you said, maybe I'm just a fool. I can't do this?
Well, I mean, everyone has a temptation, right? Where you hear that side of that kind of negative side talking to you. Mm-hmm. And what I tried to do with everything, well, first of all, we still have an office in San Francisco that's growing, and Austin now, and Seattle. The reason why I have the three of them is because technology talent's there, but they have differentiated qualities of life and different reasons why they're. So I brought the office to where the talent is. I located right next to Amazon purposely. So that's why I'm in Seattle. I just recruited a guy out of Amazon just recently. He just gave his notice to Amazon. So we just started pummeling Amazon 3 weeks ago, and we have two other guys in the pipeline. So, but I'm going after Amazon because I like some of the way that they spin up products fast. So I got an engineer manager coming in to the company. He's already signed on and stuff. So I go where the opportunity is. Like, I don't have any connections to Seattle. All I thought of it was rainy, right? So I just moved my family up there because we're going to go attack Amazon's base of talent, right? And their knowledge networks. Also, I wanted Starbucks. So my head of talent now is from Starbucks, actually, from their corporate center. And because that's located up there, because they're the best of talent in the world, I think. So that's why I did that. But so I'm extremely opportunistic. I'm strategic. Like, I have this almost to the point that people think I'm just some wacky visionary. Straightforward. I mean, I'm sure maybe you thought that too. People think that. But then on the other hand, I have this other side to me. My other half is just like, it's just grit, determination, and very pragmatic. You know, it's like two different people. It's like, I have this like vision I'm working towards, but then in the meantime, I just move through where I find like holes. It's like, oh, there's a hole over here. Boom, pop through there. I see this opportunity. I move after it. But
this is all your money in the business.
I've capitalized trust work. I put like $3 million into it, but I'm willing to come in with more. So I might come in with another $7 million shortly. It's not profitable now. Trust work?
Okay. Yeah.
No, it's not profitable. I could make trust work profitable today though. So now to do that, I would have to chop my biz dev and stop growing so fast, right? Then I would hit a growth rate slow. Not going to do that. So
what's the bit? Wait, so biz dev then is what's growing the business. What kind of business development are you doing that's growing the business?
Well, so if I want to get owners onto the platform and I got to get them served, I've got to hire people to do that. That's why I said I'm backed up on, you know, we have job requests coming in, but we can't take all these jobs. So now I could turn down these jobs or I can go ahead and hire ahead of me. But when you hire people that cost, you know, six figures, I mean, you're going negative. So, and yeah, they're going to get those jobs done, but are those jobs enough really to make slow? They will be in the next, I think in 36 months, my thing is I don't need to hit cash flow positive necessarily right now. I am a cash flow guy. I'm not an Elon Musk guy. I'm basically the opposite business approach. I am a cash flow guy and I don't understand how else to think about things, but I'm also willing to just suffer for like a long time without cash flow. So I'm going to suffer for probably another 3 years without any cash flow where I'll just watch my money get whittled down, but it's an investment. That's the thing. I'm not just,
and you've got enough money in the bank to do this. You've got what, more than 20 million in the bank personally?
I mean, I've got a good amount of cash and I've got assets still. I mean, I've got a good amount of assets, but I've also got cash. So I already capitalized Trustwork though with like 3 million and I took some additional investors in. That were close friends, like those early partners I told you about, those guys are in for, you know, not a lot. I have like 90%+ of the capital in, but still I wanted to hook them up. So they're in the early stage. And I also hooked up another guy who's been with me for about 8 years as well. So he's also in and they're totally bullish as well. I mean, look, I mean, you'd have to be crazy to be bullish on this company in a way, but they know me really well. So they're counting on my ability to just basically figure out a way. One of my mottos has always been find a way or make one. And, so we're just going to find a way or make one as a team. And and that's kind of what's happening, right? Like, I didn't think I was going to be in San Francisco 2-3 years ago, right? I love California, right? But I didn't think that necessarily. I said I need software development talent. I started looking at where the best talent is. And I saw it was heavily concentrated for startup, the best ecosystems, San Francisco. So I moved right into the middle of that. And before I moved, I had my assistant select the location based on where the most capital has gone in the startups. So I moved right into One Hawthorne, if people know where that is.
In San Francisco?
That area, actually, in San Francisco. It's right on like 3rd and like Howard, I think.
Oh, it's like two blocks away from where I am right now, right near the office. Yes.
Yeah, so that's where I moved. And I moved there based on, we just mapped up where all the capital's gone the most. Invested and boom, I moved right there as close as I can get. Yeah, literally. My family, I have three kids too and a wife, but my wife knew how I was before I got married and she's totally game, you know? So a lot of people be like, man, your poor wife, man.
She was okay with you, but, by the way, traveling for all those countries, all those cities. She just put up with it.
She traveled with me to about 60 countries.
Okay.
We only had one kid at the time. Now, she didn't go to some countries that were, you know, at the time had, you know, a little bit of danger, or a little bit more danger than other countries. So I went to those solo, and I took, you know, I took precaution. I checked the reports. I made sure I had people there to meet with me and stuff. So I wasn't, you know, reckless. But I went to some of the countries that would just be inappropriate for her to go. And she was a little bit nervous too. So.
Wow. But she, I heard that she didn't get to see you much while you were doing that traveling. A friend of yours said, hey, look, you're a father with kids. You can't do this.
No, she was with me. She was with me. Yeah.
She was with you
For 60 countries.
Yeah, oh, wow.
So 20 countries. It would be like, I would go hit like three countries that were maybe on the more, on the spectrum of just more risky. Mm-hmm. I would hit those and then come back in like a week. Boom, pop back, and then we'd continue.
Yeah.
Depending on the parts of the world that we are in and where those issues were.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm looking at One Hawthorne. I've got bad memories of there because I was looking for an electric scooter there the other day, and I was late to get home because it wasn't there. It's a good area there where you were. All right. Why don't we close it out with this? Your t-shirt. No one's seeing it because people just want to listen to the audio. But I can see it. It says Facebook thumbs up, trust work. And then Facebook, there's a thumbs down, excuse me. For trust work, there's that punch, which is your logo. I get the punch as your logo on the shirt. Why Facebook thumbs down on your shirt?
I mean, it was a joke. And when we started out, it was before a lot of the Facebook negativity or whatever that started hitting. But we made a bunch of shirts. And the main thing is I juxtaposition us to explain sometimes how we're, you know, what is trustwork? Oh, what's the opposite of Facebook? Facebook is a social network or whatever. Trustwork is a productivity network.
Got it.
That's why.
All right. For anyone who wants to check it out, I've got the app. I think that's the best way to look at you guys. Yes, you're all over the web too. But everything funnels me into the app, and I'm glad I checked it out because I feel like I get a much better understanding of it through the app. It's in every app store that you know of. There are two. It's Google and Apple. Who am I kidding? Or you can just go to trustwork.com and download it and check things out from there. I want to thank the two sponsors who made this interview happen. The first, hey, James Altucher. He is the guy who's got that phone number. I wonder if people are going to remember this. This is like a new thing for me. Phone number, if you want to text to learn about how to write a book. Imagine, Peter, if you took all those notes, 1,600 pages, I think it was, of notes. Imagine if you took it and you wrote and you turned it into a book. Here's how the world is right now. Right. What would you title that book, Peter?
I would say I don't know what I'd title it. The general theme would be we've got to get people to rise up across the world. The U.S. only has 340 million people or a little bit more than that. But the rest of the world, we've got, you know, 6.7 billion people. And a lot of these people got tremendous grit, determination and talent. And we've got to give them, we want to open up similar opportunities that we have in the U.S. In the U.S., I also want people moving up too. But, I mean, these are people with hearts and, you know, they bleed red just like us. And they've got that determination. They want to come up. So let's make the world rise up.
Rise up. And then the subtitle would be like empower entrepreneurs around the world or create the opportunity to create entrepreneurs all over the world.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the mission of Trustwork is empower people to rise up and live abundantly. So maybe I'd call that the book.
Oh, there you go. Good. And it'd be a great reason for people to go and interview you because they'd look at your book, people to understand what you're about. I know that you've got way more complicated ideas than we could fit into an hour long interview. You'd be able to nail it there. If you're interested and anyone else who's in my audience who's interested and want help from James Altucher to turn those ideas into a book, get your phone, text this number. Here's a number, 504-45, and the name, of course, the one word that you texted them is Andrew, like my name. And finally, I want to thank the second sponsor who made this interview happen. It's HostGator. If you need a website hosted, you really should bring it to HostGator.com/MixerD. Guys, let me know how this interview was for you. I've been on Twitter a lot more lately. Tweet at me and let me know how this and other interviews are. My Twitter handle is Andrew Warner. Peter, you got a lot of followers. I'll tweet at you or I'll just follow you on Twitter.
Yeah, at Peter Rex if anybody wants to follow or stay up to date on what's going on with Trustwork because that's where we let everybody know. So
yeah, Peter Rex. I like that last name. Rex means king, doesn't it, in Latin?
Yep.
Yeah, Peter Rex. All right. Thanks so much for doing this. Thanks,
Andrew,
everyone.
You're the man. Thank you.
You too.
Appreciate it.
I'll let you go. Bye, everyone.